Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Making Sense with Steve Lazor.
Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen, fellow liberals and Democrats, curious Republicans, concerned citizens of all kinds. It's great to have you here at Making Sense with Steve Lazor, the show that breaks down the top issues in the last week in politics, strips out all the nonsense, and provides you the best analysis in political media. Welcome aboard, and let's get to work. We have a terrific show this week. Topics include a quick follow-up on the story I led with last week regarding Daryl Not-So-Nice-a with the truth, and the fraud he perpetrated on the American people regarding the IRS situation. Then the Supreme Court's three most important decisions last week could best be described as the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then an update on the attempts to pass immigration reform. If you want to write to me and give me your opinion of any topic I cover, write to makingsenseletters@yahoo.com, and I may just read your opinion on the air. So we'll get started with our first segment right after this.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions, and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh, and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy, and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies.
Welcome back. We start with a quick follow-up on the lies Daryl Issa has been telling the American people regarding the IRS issue. My show last week aired when it always does, Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio and Monday 2 p.m. Pacific Time on KCAA Radio. Immediately after the show ended, my friends started calling me up and saying, "Wow, Steve, you were really strong with your accusations concerning Congressman Daryl Issa. Are you sure you should have said those things?" And I said, "There is not a doubt in my mind concerning this story. Not a doubt. You watch." Within a few hours, liberal pundits across the country started saying the same things about Congressman Issa, from the primetime folks at MSNBC to various fellow liberal radio hosts. I'm not saying that they got it from me. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I will say that my show was one of the first to air some of those kinds of accusations and calls for fraud and ethics investigations of ISA. It's true that my show discusses the big issues over the last 7 days, but the analysis is fresh as of the day that the show airs, to the point that we do come in first many times ahead of other shows. It's a unique way that we treat the news here at Making Sense. But in the case of Daryl Issa and other Republicans, they have been throwing out a deceptively edited interpretation of events concerning the IRS issues since this story first broke. At the very beginning, some 6 weeks or so ago, you know, some errors might have been understandable. I made that mistake myself. My knee-jerk reaction was that the IRS did something wrong here, and that's the take that I gave during a Fox News appearance. You see, to know the truth of this story, you have to read the rules regarding the 501c3 and 501c4 organizations and get some examples of how they're supposed to be applied. The problem is, my friends in the conservative media and the Republican members of the House and Senate either never bothered to understand those rules, or they willfully ignored them. 6 weeks later, I think it's fair to say that all of the above willfully ignored them. A little over a week after the story broke, I had done the research to really understand that the IRS did nothing wrong here, and I talked about that on my show. That's now 4 weeks ago. It was around that time that Daryl Issa started with his chicanery regarding the interviews of the IRS officials. He selectively released what seemed like testimony damaging to the White House. Then Friday, June 21st, Representative Elijah Cummings released the full transcript of those interviews, and we find out that the truth of what the IRS officials testified to completely exonerates the White House and indicates that ISA provided the American people fraudulent, out-of-context versions of the IRS officials' statements in order to hurt the administration. I went through all of that in my show last week. If that isn't bad enough, it gets even worse. It came out this last week that Republicans have been selectively releasing information all along regarding the IRS targeting, which was the whole reason this issue became a supposed scandal in the first place. It turns out that it wasn't just conservative groups like the Tea Party groups being targeted. The IRS was also targeting liberal and progressive groups. Why? Because, as I have been saying for 4 weeks on this show, the rules for these nonprofit 501c groups really do not apply to the vast majority of political organizations. Now, it's a little more likely that liberal political groups would qualify because the 501c4 status requires that your political expenditures and any campaign activity be for the purpose of disadvantaged groups. You can't advocate directly for any candidate, and any issue you advocate for has to be related to advocacy for disadvantaged groups. Now, I'm simplifying it slightly. I went into it in depth 4 weeks ago. But if you understand that much, you understand why a Tea Party organization has no hope of qualifying. And so IRS targeting of Tea Party group tax-exempt applications is completely justified. They should be doing it. Now, the latest information that came out this week was that almost 100% of Tea Party groups applying for tax-exempt status were targeted for review, as it should be. And around 30% of liberal and progressive groups were targeted for review. And again, this is understandable, since it is those of us on the left side of the political aisle, Democrats, liberals, and progressives, that actually advocate for the government to provide services to disadvantaged groups, which is what the tax-exempt regulations require. The most stunning fact here is that the only group whose 501c4 application was actually denied, the only one, the main chapter of Emerge America, is a progressive organization that trains Democratic women to run for office. Now, folks, the facts are just one part of this, right? They're important. What Republicans and elected officials and the conservative portions of the media have been trying to feed the public regarding this issue is another part of this issue, and it's really been shameful. We've been hearing lies upon frauds, upon out-of-context edits, upon deception from Republicans in the House and conservative punditry regarding the IRS issue. And at the center of all of that is Congressman Daryl Issa. Mr. Issa seems to have been using that most ugly and cynical of political and media strategies, lie, smear, and scandal monger, and manufacture outrage up front, knowing that that is what people will remember, and that they won't remember that the facts that are lately unearthed that exonerate your target. They won't remember that. Of course, we shouldn't be surprised that someone with the nickname Mr. Grand Theft Auto is behaving in an ethically challenged way. Anyone who is on the fence about whether Mr. Issa is trustworthy should Google Mr. Issa and auto theft. Mr. Issa has been arrested for two instances of grand theft pertaining to vehicles that were either stolen or involved in insurance fraud on vehicles. He was accused of a third instance when he was in the Army. And folks, I want to say that in at least two of these cases, Mr. Issa resolved the issues in a way that make it pretty clear he was involved in wrongdoing. Now, how anyone with that kind of a background gets elected to Congress, I have no idea. What's even more bizarre is how anyone like that convinces one of the two major parties to elect him chair of one of the most important committees in Congress, one with investigative powers for oversight regarding any potential government wrongdoing. How is it the Republicans elected him to that? Daryl Issa being in charge of the Congressional Oversight Committee is like if Ted Bundy had been put in charge of a victims' rights organization. Nor is the IRS investigation the first question that has been raised over Daryl Issa's ethics. In 2011, ABC News reported on how American Family Voices, a liberal advocacy organization, filed an ethics complaint against Issa, claiming he has repeatedly and impermissibly used his public position to promote his private financial interests. AFV said that Issa used his position of authority on the Oversight Committee to improperly intervene in dealings with Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, and DEI Holdings, all of which Issa is associated with in some way. According to the complaint obtained by CBS News, Issa pressured the Securities and Exchange Commission into inaction after the commission sued Goldman Sachs for allegedly defrauding investors in the lead up to the 2008 financial crisis, despite the fact that Issa had millions of dollars in assets held by Goldman Sachs. It also alleges that he used his authority to intervene in an investigation into Bank of America's purchase of Merrill Lynch while being a major customer who bought and sold more than $200 million in Merrill Lynch mutual funds in the days after the Bank of America acquisition. So what I want to know is the same thing that I wanted to know last week. Who is going to exercise oversight over Daryl Issa? How much longer is he going to be allowed to lie and deceive the American people? How much more taxpayer money is he going to be allowed to spend in these investigations based on lies and deception? And there's a more basic question. How is this guy, with the things that he has done, how is he in Congress, let alone chairman of the Congressional Oversight Committee? Let's hope that the House Ethics Committee or the Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations starts looking into Congressman Issa's conduct. We'll be right back. What's the biggest fallacy about diamonds? More facets are better and will create more fire. Doesn't that make sense? Nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, larger facets create more fire. The new Blaze Cut is a unique square diamond with a fabulous display of colors never before seen emanating from a diamond. In fact, the Blaze Diamond has 9 times the fire of any other round diamond of the same size. It took a genius to invent the Blaze Diamond and an amazing artist to highlight the beauty in fine jewelry. View Blaze Diamond Jewelry by Bez Ambar on Badler.com, BADLER.com, or search Blaze Diamond on YouTube to see remarkable videos. Experience this new innovation by coming to Maurice Badler Fine Jewelry in New York City, 485 Park Avenue between 58th and 59th Streets. Visit Badler.com for more information or call 800-M-BADLER. That's 800-M-B-A-D-L-E-R. The Supreme Court's 3 most important decisions last week could best be described as the good, the bad, and the ugly. In addition to several other decisions, the Supreme Court delivered its decisions on the 2 gay marriage cases, the Voting Rights Act, and on affirmative action. The good Supreme Court decisions were regarding same-sex marriage. There were 2 same-sex marriage cases before the Supreme Court, Hollingsworth v. Perry, which was the California Proposition 8 case, and U.S. v. Windsor, which dealt with Section 3 of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. If you recall, Proposition 8 was a California ballot proposition that added a prohibition enshrined in a state constitutional amendment that marriage could only be between one man and one woman in California. The Supreme Court ruled that the loose coalition of people fighting to keep Proposition 8 enforced in California did not have the legal standing to argue the case. This left into effect a lower court's ruling that overturned Proposition 8 for having violated the due process and equal protection clauses of the U.S. Constitution. As a result, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled on Friday the 28th that same-sex marriages could resume in California, and Rachel Maddow broadcasted the marriage of two of the plaintiffs in the Prop 8 case, Paul Katami and Jeff Zerillo, live on her show on June 28th. In U.S. v. Windsor, the Supreme Court struck down Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act. Justice Kennedy's opinion for the majority stated that the federal government's refusal to recognize legal same-sex marriages has imposed a stigma, enshrined a separate status into law, and humiliates a group of people, and that is unconstitutional. Sahil Kapoor, in an article in Talking Points Memo, discussed Antonin Scalia's dissent in the DOMA case, in particular his top 10 rage quotes in the dissent, such as, "Diseased root," Scalia discussed and called the exalted conception of the role of this institution, the Supreme Court, in America, a, quote, "diseased root." He referred to the majority decision as jaw-dropping, black-robed supremacy, and legalistic argle-bargle. But what Scalia's dissenting really boiled down to was captured in another of his quotes when he said, quote, "As I have observed before, the Constitution does not forbid the government to enforce traditional moral and sexual norms. However, even setting aside traditional moral disapproval of same-sex marriage, or indeed same-sex sex, there are many perfectly valid, indeed downright boring, justifying rationales for this legislation. Their existence ought to be the end of this case." So the way I interpret that, you know, Scalia's belief, probably religiously based, of what moral and sexual norms are is what he made the decision from. And who cares what he thinks about that? Why does what his religious opinion is of same-sex marriage have a bearing on decisions regarding the freedoms and equality of people in this country? And why does he think it should? That's really the problem with conservatism in America today, isn't it? That conservatives and Republicans think that they have the right to impose what they think is moral on everybody else. It reminds me of this funny piece I saw the other day. Claiming someone else's marriage is against your religion is like getting angry at someone else for eating a donut because you're on a diet. Worry about what you eat, Republicans. Worry about who you marry, conservatives. To use one of my favorite vernacular statements from the black community, mind your business. With the unspoken second clause being, don't involve yourself in other people's business. Now, as I indicated earlier, the effects from the two gay marriage decisions began to be felt almost immediately. Gay couples in Florida have started marrying again as of Friday. And many married gay couples are refiling their taxes for the last 3 years to take advantage of marital deductions. The federal government moved swiftly after the decision on DOMA to offer benefits to gay and lesbian married couples and their families who work for the federal government. The Office of Personnel Management sent out a guidance on the benefits to include participation in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program under a self or family option. A federal employee has until August 26th to make immediate changes to his or her family's enrollment status, and participants can also make changes during the open enrollment status season later this year. Participation in the Federal Employees Group Life Insurance Program, the largest group life insurance program in the world, and lesbian and gay employees have until August 26th to make changes to their enrollment status. They also can participate in the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program, which covers costs for such services as nursing home care, respite services, and home care, and also dental and vision insurance and several other important benefits. So these are real changes that have come about nearly instantaneously as a result of the Supreme Court's decision. Of course, there's a lot more work to be done to further LGBT equality. I think ENDA is the next item on the list. ENDA is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. I wonder if people know that in many places, your boss can fire you if they think that you're gay. There's nothing to stop them in most states from doing that. 21 states and over 140 cities and counties have one or more variations of laws that ban discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, but that still leaves a lot of areas of the country where employers can refuse to hire you, can fire you, or refuse to promote you based on your sexual orientation or on what they assume your sexual orientation is. You don't have to actually be gay or lesbian. They can think you are one, and they can legally discriminate against you. If passed, ENDA would prohibit discrimination in hiring and employment on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity by civilian non-religious employers with at least 15 employees. Now, ENDA has been introduced by every two-year incarnation of Congress since 1994, except one. So let's hope that ENDA gets passed soon. The Supreme Court decision on the Voting Rights Act in Shelby County v. Holder, or the bad in terms of my description of the decisions as the good, the bad, and the ugly. I just love that. But the Voting Rights Act decision was one of the worst decisions that the Supreme Court has made in a long time. If you aren't familiar with it, as described by Wikipedia, the 1965 Voting Rights Act established extensive federal oversight of elections administration, providing that states with a history of discriminatory voting practices, so-called covered jurisdictions, could not implement any change affecting voting without first obtaining the approval of the Department of Justice, a process known as preclearance. Now, these enforcement provisions applied to states and political subdivisions, mostly in the South, that had used a device to limit voting and in which less than 50% of the population was registered to vote in 1964. The act has been renewed and amended by Congress four times, the most recent being a 25-year extension signed into law by President George W. Bush in 2006. Now, it's important to understand why the Voting Rights Act was needed in the first place. The history books show that between 1890 and 1910, 10 of the 11 former Confederate states, starting with Mississippi, passed laws that disenfranchised most blacks through a combination of poll taxes, literacy and comprehension tests, and residency and record-keeping requirements. The effects were drastic. In Louisiana, by 1900, black voters were reduced to 5,320 on the rolls, even though they compromised a majority of Louisiana's population. By 1910, only 730 blacks were registered, less than 0.5% of eligible black men. In 27 of Louisiana's 60 parishes, not a single black voter was registered any longer. In 9 more parishes, only one black voter was registered. The effect in North Carolina meant that black voters were completely eliminated from voter rolls during the period of 1896 through 1904. The growth of the African-American thriving middle class was slowed. In North Carolina and other southern states, there was also the effects of invisibility. Within a decade of disenfranchisement, the white supremacy campaign had erased the image of the black middle class from the minds of white North Carolinians. Now, why? Well, because blacks could not vote. They were not eligible to serve on juries. They couldn't run for local office. They effectively disappeared from political life, as they couldn't influence the state legislatures, and the interests of African Americans in those states was overlooked. Those efforts continued decade after decade as Southern legislators kept devising ways to keep as many Southern blacks disenfranchised as possible through the early 1960s until the Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965. And passage of the Voting Rights Act almost didn't happen. Passage of the Voting Rights Act required a sacrifice in blood. The efforts to bring about federal intervention to prevent discrimination in voting included the voting rights protests in Selma, Alabama, and the famous Selma to Montgomery marches. People like Jimmie Lee Jackson, James Reeb, and Viola Liuzzo were murdered during those marches and demonstrations. Every time the Voting Rights Act has come up, the renewal efforts have been accompanied by hundreds of pages of reports showing how the bill, which requires preclearance of changes to voting laws in affected states and districts, has prevented the recent passage of laws designed to put obstacles in the way of African American voting. So we know that voter suppression laws aimed at African Americans will be passed in the wake of this ruling. We know that because voter suppression laws like voter ID laws have been passed by Republican state legislatures and governors in several states not affected by the Voting Rights Act in the last 10 years. So we can expect voter ID laws to be passed throughout the South in response to the overturn of parts of the Voting Rights Act, and that's just the beginning. If you're like me and you view the right to vote as sacrosanct, we have a lot of work to do to offset the effects of this decision. That work is going to be in two directions. First, we have to minimize the effect of any voter suppression laws passed. One of the things that should be started immediately is a campaign to get every African American person in the South and upper Midwest portions of the country a state-issued photo ID. Let's take the power of the voter ID voter suppression tactic away from Republicans. The other direction is that we need to pass new laws to protect the right to vote of every American. In fact, there should be a constitutional amendment guaranteeing the right to vote. It's unbelievable that in 2013, any democracy in the world, let alone the United States of America, does not have enshrined in the Constitution the right to vote. We need to change that. Now, about the ugly. Wow. The Supreme Court's affirmative action decision in Fisher v. University of Texas is really slathered with spaghetti logic. Slate's Richard Thompson Ford wrote that for supporters of affirmative action, the Supreme Court's opinion in Fisher v. University of Texas Monday's ruling on affirmative action is like Animal House's double secret probation. The Supreme Court did not end race-based affirmative action programs. Instead, the majority of seven doubled down on strict scrutiny, the relatively exacting standard courts use to assess whether the government can make law that treats people differently on the basis of race. But Ford notes that Fisher still leaves several questions unanswered. The court said that before turning to traditional affirmative action, schools have to prove that no workable race-neutral alternatives would produce the educational benefit of diversity. Now, Slate's Ford asks a good question. What exactly is a race-neutral means of achieving racial diversity? Now, one potential answer is that schools like the University of Texas could have people scour the country for talented African Americans and Latinos and try to get them to apply. But still, why is that even necessary? The young woman who filed suit against the University of Texas for discrimination didn't meet the university's general requirements. The University of Texas, their general admissions policy is that they accept students in the top 10% of their class. That's their requirement. Abigail Noel Fisher, the Fisher in Fisher v. University of Texas, was 12%. She didn't make the top 10% in her high school class. That's 2% outside of the university standards. Now, her contention in her suit was that some small number of African American and Latino students outside of the top 10% were accepted, but she wasn't. You know why affirmative action is still needed? That's really the point here, right? All you have to do is read a 2005 Princeton study called Discrimination in Low-Wage Labor Markets. Princeton had 13 young male applicants with the same qualifications and experience split into teams and go on over 3,500 entry-level job interviews with private companies in New York City. Jobs ranging from restaurants to manufacturing to financial services. The team recorded who was offered a second interview or offered a job. When they compiled the stats, it turns out that young white high school graduates were twice as likely to receive positive responses from employers as equally qualified black job seekers. That's bad, right? But the bombshell result from the study is that black applicants with no criminal record were less likely to get a job than white applicants with criminal records who were just released from prison. That's how big of a disadvantage it is in our society to be a person of color. And yes, that makes it still necessary for us to have affirmative action programs. We'll be right back.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions, and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh, and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy, and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid. All that glitters is gold.
Now an update on the attempts to pass immigration reform. I'm getting seasick from all the ups and downs in the efforts to pass immigration reform. The efforts were kickstarted after this last election. Exit polls showed that Mitt Romney had won a higher percentage of the white vote than any other losing presidential candidate in American history. Romney won 59% of the white vote, 62% of white men, and 56% of white women. But he lost 55% of women overall, 69% of Jews, 71% of Latinos, 73% of Asians, and 93% of African Americans. Republicans looked at those exit polls and realized that they could not continue losing that percentage of the Latino vote and hope to compete in future elections. So overnight, many prominent conservative media personalities and Republican elected officials changed their opinion on immigration reform. How about that? Now, if you've been a longtime listener of this show, you're really familiar with this audio clip I'm about to play from Sean Hannity from a day or two after Election Day.
We got to get rid of the immigration issue altogether. It's simple for me to fix it. I think you control the border first. You create a pathway for those people that are here. You don't say you got to go home. And that is a position that I've evolved on. Because, you know what, it's got to be resolved. The majority of people here, if some people have criminal records, you can send them home. But if people are here, law-abiding, participating, 4 years, their kids are born here, you know, it's first secure the border, pathway to citizenship, done.
I could listen to that 3 times a day, and it would still sound funny. You know, if you've heard all the stuff that Sean Hannity used to say against immigration reform, that piece, well, it's priceless. But after seeing the exit poll statistics, many Republicans had changes of heart like Sean Hannity. So Republicans started out after the election in mid to late November with an attitude that they were willing to work with Democrats on immigration reform. Then the various conservative anti-immigration reform lobbying groups started working hard on the Republican side. And it's gotten to the point several times in the last few months where it seemed that Republicans had sufficiently changed their minds back to the point where immigration reform wasn't going to pass. As recently as 2 to 3 weeks ago, it looked like the Senate, for instance, the immigration reform bill there was not going to survive a Republican filibuster. Well, this past Thursday, the U.S. Senate passed the immigration reform bill by a vote of 68 to 32. All 53 Democrats in the Senate voted for immigration reform. One independent voted for it, Bernie Sanders. And they were joined by 14 Republicans. By the way, 14 Republicans out of 46 Republicans in the Senate equates to about 30% of Republicans being in favor of the bill. You can see how Republican support for immigration reform has waned since November. But this one major hurdle has been surmounted. The Senate has passed the bill. We know that President Obama would sign it into law if it landed on his desk. So now the only thing that stands in the way of comprehensive immigration reform being passed is the Republican-controlled House of Representatives. After the Senate bill passed, John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, the top Republican in the House of Representatives, had a press conference to explain his opinion on the subject.
The House is not going to take up and vote on whatever the Senate passes. We're going to do our own bill through regular order, and it'll be legislation that reflects the will of our majority. Immigration reform has to be grounded in real border security. It's what the American people believe, and it's a principle that our majority believes in as well. That's how the House will approach this issue.
Well, folks, there you have it. The Republican leadership in the House of Representatives has said they will not even bring up the immigration reform bill that the Senate passed for a vote. They're going to do their own thing, regardless of all the hard work that the Senate put in to reach a compromise. And this border security issue that Boehner talked about, if you listen to him, you'd think that there was no border security at all in the Senate bill. The fact is, the Senate bill contains within it what is known as the Hoyven-Corker Amendment. Republican Senators Corker from Tennessee and Hoyven from North Dakota created this amendment, which was passed and added to the bill, and it is all about border security. Senator Corker released a statement on his website that talks about his and Senator Hoyven's amendment, which reads, quote, "This is the toughest border security measure to ever pass the Senate, and from economic, national security, deficit reduction, and moral standpoints, it's the right thing to do," said Corker. "Because of the amendment Senator Hoyven and I added to the bill, this legislation requires an additional 20,000 border patrol agents and at least 700 miles of fencing along the southern border. Full implementation and activation of $4.5 billion in surveillance technology, an electronic visa entry-exit system, and a mandated E-Verify system for all employers. Passage of this bill gets us one step closer to securing our border in a dramatic way and to solving the immigration problem that we have struggled with for decades. According to the Congressional Budget Office, the amendment would reduce both illegal entry into the country and the number of people who stay in the country beyond the end of their authorized period, also known as visa overstays." So that all that I just read there is from Republican Senator Corker from Tennessee regarding his border security amendment that is part of the immigration reform bill just passed in the Senate. Just try and square that with the Republican House Speaker John Boehner's statement about border security. Boehner said that he and House Republicans won't even bring up the Senate bill for a vote because of border security concerns. At the very least, Republicans can't seem to get their act together amongst themselves. But there's something much more basic going on here, folks. And let me cut through the nonsense, okay? I mean, I want to use another phrase besides nonsense, but my friends at KCAA and the FCC would almost certainly not appreciate it. What's really going on here is that this is yet another delaying tactic from Republicans in Congress who ultimately hope to kill immigration reform. They want to kill it, and they're hoping that when it dies, there'll be so much confusion about the reasons that Latinos will not publish Republicans for it in the voting booth in 2014 and 2016. They think we Latinos are too stupid to figure out what's going on here. There's nothing wrong with the border security measures in the Senate bill, Mr. Boehner, and Republicans in the House of Representatives. We know it, and you know it. Not only are there strong border security measures in the Senate bill provides a reasonable way for the nation's 11 million plus undocumented immigrants to gain citizenship after a 13-year-long process that ensures that people who came here the right way get citizenship long before the undocumented folks do. It's a bill that's fair and respects all concerns all around. Boehner is clearly playing games here with the concerns of many of us in the Latino community. That's all Republicans ever do when it comes to minority concerns. They play games. That's why they get such low percentages of minority votes across the board when it comes to Election Day. I'm actually surprised they get as many votes as they do. They shouldn't get more than 5% of any minority community, but that's for another show. Latinos sent a message to the Republican Party in November of 2012, and it seems they have already forgotten that message and are playing games with Latino concerns. Well, Republicans, further reminders in 2014 and 2016 will be forthcoming. We'll be right back with our Hall of Fame and Shame after this. And now it's time for our weekly Hall of Fame and Shame for those politicians and prominent individuals who made great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. First, our Hall of Fame for making sense. Winning the Hall of Fame this week for making great sense are three Republican congressmen: James Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin, Steve Chabot from Ohio, and Sean Duffy, also from Wisconsin. If you're new to listening to my show, you might be shocked that I, a liberal progressive commentator, am honoring Republicans for making sense. I actually do that quite often when it's appropriate, when they've earned it. They certainly earned it this week. I've already covered the tragedy of the Supreme Court's ruling gutting the Voting Rights Act and what that act means to preserving the rights of African American voters in the affected regions. Now, to my surprise, these three Republican congressmen seem to get it when it comes to that law's importance. In particular, James Sensenbrenner said, quote, "The Voting Rights Act is vital to America's commitment to never again permit racial prejudices in the electoral process. This is going to take time and will require members from both sides of the aisle to put partisan politics aside and ensure Americans' most sacred right is protected," end quote. Representative Sensenbrenner, I am floored by that. I hope you mean it. I hope you're able to convince a lot of folks on your side of the aisle that serious legislation protecting the rights of African American voters needs to come quickly in the wake of the Supreme Court decision. And by the way, Republican Representative Steve Chabot from Ohio and Sean Duffy from Wisconsin also expressed support Wednesday for congressional action in response to the High Court's ruling. So congratulations, Wisconsin Congressman James Sensenbrenner and Sean Duffy, and Ohio Congressman Steve Chabot, for winning this week's Hall of Fame for making great sense. Now our Hall of Shame this week for those politicians and prominent individuals who made shameful nonsense.
All aboard!
In third place this week in our Hall of Shame, we have New Jersey Republican Governor Chris Christie. It's really a shame because I just got finished honoring three Republicans for respecting the rights of a vulnerable minority. And here is Chris Christie engaging in the same old bigoted nonsense against the LGBT community. I guess when it comes to minorities and their concerns, it's one step forward and two or three steps backward with the Republican Party. Governor Christie reacted to the Supreme Court's decision on the gay marriage cases by saying the following on a local radio show in New Jersey.
Well, listen, I don't think the ruling was appropriate. I think it was wrong. I think it's typical, Eric, of what the problem we see in the New Jersey Supreme Court. The court, without a basis in standing, substituted their own judgment for the judgment of a Republican Congress and a Democratic president in the Republican Congress in the 90s and Bill Clinton. And I thought that Justice Kennedy's opinion in many respects was incredibly insulting to those people. 340-some members of Congress who voted for the Defense of Marriage Act. And Bill Clinton, he basically said the only reason to pass that bill was to demean people. That's a heck of a thing to say about Bill Clinton and about the Republican Congress back in the 90s.
Now, that wasn't all. During a town hall meeting this past Wednesday night, Christie said he is still opposed to gay marriage and would veto it again if a bill came to his desk. He said in that town hall, quote, "What I've said all along is what I said when I vetoed the last one. Let the people decide. You're talking about changing an institution that's over 2,000 years old. The Democrats are putting an increase in the minimum wage on the ballot. That's important enough to put on the ballot, but gay marriage is not," end quote. To which I respond, "Actually, no, Governor Christie. The rights of the people should not be up to a popular vote. This is one of those inalienable rights the Constitution talks about. For gratuitous anti-gay bigotry, New Jersey's Republican Governor Chris Christie is third this week in our Hall of Shame for worst nonsense of the week. In second place for even worse nonsense this week, we have Texas Republican Governor Rick Perry. Before I get into that, how about Wendy Davis the other night, folks? Wasn't she amazing? She's this Texas state senator who filibustered a restrictive anti-choice bill in the Texas state legislature for 11 hours. 11 hours straight, standing on her feet, doing nothing but talking about that bill. I think that's amazing. She's terrific. Well, the Republican governor of Texas, Rick Perry, didn't think that she was deserving of praise. In a speech Thursday at the National Right to Life Convention, Perry couldn't resist taking a swing at Senator Davis. Here's what he said.
"Even the woman who filibustered the Senate the other day was born into difficult circumstances. She was the daughter of a single woman. She was a teenage mother herself. She managed to eventually graduate from Harvard Law School and serve in the Texas Senate. It's just unfortunate that she hasn't learned from her own example."
So first of all, let's not kid ourselves about what he was doing here, okay? Mentioning the fact that Senator Davis was a teenaged mother is a thinly veiled attempt by Perry to suggest she has loose morals. I mean, particularly in front of that crowd, at the Right to Life convention, full of folks who think that they can impose their morality on other people and restrict other people's choices based on their religious beliefs. That's what he was doing with that statement. What was even further insulting is that Rick Perry reduces Wendy Davis to a teenaged mother who was the daughter of a single woman. As far as he's concerned, that's the only thing in her life experience that should inform her decision on abortion. It can't be that being a single career woman with a child also informed Senator Davis how tough it is to be a single provider of a child when that child is not planned, and how women may want to make the choice whether they want to be put into that situation. Perry couldn't further fathom that going to an institution like Harvard Law School and learning about the Constitution and rights couldn't also inform her decision about women's rights and choice. No, Perry discounts all of that and reduces her to a teenage mother. That's all she is to him. That's all he wants other people to think about her. Texas Governor Rick Perry is runner-up this week in our Hall of Shame for infamous nonsense. But the worst and most shameful nonsense of the week goes to Phyllis Schlafly. Phyllis Schlafly is one of those people who could probably make the Hall of Shame every time she talks about politics. For those of you who don't know her, since the time where she was having the biggest impacts on politics is long past, She was one of the leading conservative voices against the Equal Rights Amendment in the early 1970s. The Equal Rights Amendment sought to prohibit discrimination against women on account of sex. Republicans and conservatives loved having a woman to lead that charge. Schlafly was quite the traitor in terms of equal rights for women. In terms of her general bent, she was and continues to be every bit as conservative as a Rush Limbaugh or Ann Coulter or Sean Hannity. What earns her her spot in the Hall of Shame this week is a statement that she made about Latinos when asked on a radio show a few days ago whether Latinos should be natural Republicans. Let's listen.
No, I think the Republicans have misread the ball. I don't think they have Republican inclinations at all. They're running an illegitimacy rate that's just about the same as the blacks are. And the plain fact is they come from a country where they have no experience with limited government and the types of rights we have in the Bill of Rights. They don't understand that at all. You can't even talk to them about what the Republican principle is.
Now, what an ugly series of statements by her, really. Latinos' illegitimacy rate is almost as high as the blacks. What an ugly racist statement against both African Americans and Latinos. And when she talked about, quote, the country that Latinos come from, Ms. Schlafly, please, do yourself a favor and go on the internet and look at a map of Central and South America, okay? There's considerably more than one country there. And the kinds of governments in those countries vary greatly. And Latinos don't understand the Bill of Rights? So here's another ugly and ethnocentric phrase, and that coming from a person who doesn't understand the idea or is against the idea of equality for women. I mean, that's just way too much. This has to be, that's the entirety of that statement that I played, has to be one of the most ugly and racist and ethnocentric series of statements that anyone has packed into a short paragraph that I've heard in a long time. When I first heard that, I took a deep breath, and I decided, for the moment, to give Ms. Schlafly the benefit of the doubt and see if I could find other statements by her that would either show that she wasn't really like that or that would reinforce that she really is this bigoted of a person. Turns out, I found another piece by her regarding Latinos. Here it is.
One of the big issues here is the Republicans trying to figure out a way to connect with Hispanics. And President Bush did it, but what is your suggestion for them?
Well, I think that's a great myth because the Hispanics who come in like this are going to vote Democrat. And there is not a slightest bit of evidence that they're going to vote Republican. And the people of the Republicans should reach out to are the white votes. That the white voters who didn't vote in the last election, and there are millions of them.
So Schlafly's advice to Republicans is to write off the Latino vote and concentrate on appealing to white people. She really doesn't like African Americans or Latinos very much, does she? We can probably add women to that list with her history of opposing the Equal Rights Amendment. Phyllis Schlafly thoroughly and completely wins the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week. That's all I have for today's show. Thank you for listening. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser will air live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio this Sunday and Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time on KCAA Radio, 1050 a.m. in Inland Empire, California. Be sure to follow me in the show on Twitter at Steven Laser, on Facebook at Making Sense with Steve Laser, and on my blog at stevelaser.blogspot.com. Until next time, have a great rest of your day and a great week.